You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you, and frankly, guys like me, want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code MajorityReport when you check out. Check it out, harrys.com.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, October 17th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times. In our last couple of weeks, the Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Yes, folks, it's Casual Friday. I think our second to last Casual Friday, because the last Casual Friday of the month, we're probably going to have to take off to move the office, the studio. But it is Casual Friday. That means Cliff Schechter is on the program. And also, ostensibly, to give me a streaming movie recommendation for the weekend.
We might have to figure this out.
Well, let me finish my intro.
All right. Jesus.
Isabel Gillies. Now, Matt, do you want to figure something out?
The last Casual Friday of the month is Halloween.
Ooh. I just need to fall. We might need to just move up.
All right, let's have this conversation outside.
No. I think it's better that people get in on the inside process.
Oh, no, that happens in the better half. That's inside the Majority Report. Remember we had that conversation?
We do logistics?
Oh, my God.
What a great sales pitch.
Jesus. Things are really falling apart here. In the this would never happen in the literal nor metaphorical shadow of the New York Times. On the program today, we're also a couple of weeks out from the midterm elections. Meanwhile, that story of the activist in Ferguson, the cop is now being investigated. We will talk about that as well. Andrew Cuomo has a great quote on the difficulty that he's had to face having the name Cuomo. It's really, I think there's nothing more telling as to just exactly what a person's sensibility is than this type of. I don't know how to contextualize this, but there's a disease. Literally, maybe it's affluenza, but it's not quite affluenza. There's just a disease that some people of privilege have. There's no doubt in my mind that, let me just go into this, and we'll start with this, and then we'll get to Cliff. We also have some great sound of just some conservative morons. This Ebola stuff is just, it's crazy. But we'll get into that with Cliff a little bit, too. So here's Andrew Cuomo. He's come out with a new book. I don't know what the title is. I'm not even going to say it if I did know it, because no one would buy it. He had a book talk or promotion in New York City. I think it was yesterday or the day before. More protesters protesting fracking showed up than people actually showed up to buy his book. Yeah. Oh. I feel really bad for him. And here is Andrew Cuomo in an interview in the New York Times about his book. He's asked, "You also write that there are ultimately more negatives than positives." Listen to this. "More negatives than positives to being a famous politician's son. Why? I wouldn't trade my father or our experiences for anything." That's very big of him. He's going to go into the newspaper and say, going to be neutral about his dad. But politically, it's a negative. Because you get all your father's enemies and not all his friends. I want you to contemplate for one moment why this guy even has a career in politics. Even the most casual observer of politics would either express or specifically, explicitly point out that this guy gets who knows how many percentage of his votes are simply deferred to him because there's an assumption that he has the same liberal values that his father had. Now, truth be told, his father wasn't that liberal either. But the perception of Mario Cuomo has helped Andrew Cuomo in a way that is virtually impossible to measure beyond the fact that it's been extremely helpful. I don't know if it's 10% of his votes come from just the name recognition or 20, but if someone told me it was 30% or 40% of his votes come from a combination just from the name recognition alone, never mind the attributes that are projected onto him. But then step back from that. Here's a guy who's worked his way through politics, some electoral, some through appointments. The idea that having a father who is governor of New York has not been the sine qua non of his political success is complete delusion. It's the same delusion that Mitt Romney had. It's just absurd. But this guy's, not only is he not acknowledging it, he actually thinks it's a net negative. This is how much he has deluded himself. And when you live with that type of delusion about your own privilege, it necessarily follows that you're going to lead like you are Governor 1%. I'll be voting for Howie Hawkins because he's the Green candidate. And I do not believe that there will be enough votes for the Green candidate to throw the election to Rob Astorino, the Republican. And so I will be voting for Howie Hawkins in any way that I can add my tiny, tiny drop in the bucket to embarrass Governor 1%, quid pro Cuomo, Cuomo the lesser. I will. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. Your mind. You shot and I women, you love to.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Harry's. Here's the deal. I don't like to shave, and I certainly don't like to pay a lot of money. All right, you shave with a dull blade, you cut yourself, blood drips down your face, your kids are like, oh, Dad, what's going on? You're bleeding. And I don't like to pay $4 a pop for one of these razors to do it. Harry's makes their own razors in their own factory. They ship them to you for free to your front door. And because they make and ship their own blades, they're much cheaper. Harry's guarantees your satisfaction. You can check out all the cool stuff that came in my kit. I got a razor handle with a great look and feel, 3 razor blades, and a choice of either shave cream or foaming gel. I took the foaming gel. The Starter Truman set is an amazing deal. You get all that for $15. I get a great shave, and Nikki tells me I smell great. Neither one of those things happen on any type of regular basis. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase with the coupon code MajorityReport. That's harrys.com, HARRYS.com. Enter the coupon code MajorityReport at checkout. And I want to thank Harry's for supporting the Majority Report. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday, and you know what that means. We're a little bit casual today. I'm wearing a soft collared shirt. I'll be honest with you. I haven't showered this morning. I had to race to take Milo to school. But on the upside, although I may be a little bit disheveled and smelly, the good news is we have Cliff Schechter with us. And when we have Cliff Schechter, we have this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff Schechter.
Hello, smelly Sam Seder.
Yeah, what can I do, buddy? You know, there are some of those days, but on a casual Friday, I just don't even sweat it.
Well, no pun intended, of course.
Right.
I mean, I'm okay. I'm just on a phone line with you. Those poor,
souls
in there with you. I mean, whew.
Yeah, it's tough in the office. That's one of the upsides of our sort of being somewhat forced to move out of our office, which I don't know if you're aware of. We're going to be moving across the East River to downtown Brooklyn. They raised our rent here. We've finally succumbed. But the good news is for a little bit more money, we get a lot more space. And so
doesn't Brooklyn also give you a little more street cred?
It might. I don't know that... Street
cred. Manhattan's just not so cool anymore, you know what I'm saying?
Well, we're in the fashion district, and so I have a strong fashionista following, as you know. But
that's true, but you have to begin your shows differently, because you know.
Yeah, I know, we got to work that
shadow,
out.
Shadow, the metaphorical, as you say.
Right.
Shadow.
Well, right. We may just add, no longer in the literal... And never been in the metaphorical shadow. We may move it in that fashion. But Cliff, you know, before I brought you on, I was talking about Andrew Cuomo, and and as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, I should have saved this for Cliff. But I'm voting for Howie Hawkins, Green Party, just because. Well, I don't want to vote for Cuomo. And I don't think this is going to enable a Republican victory in New York State. And so
I am released to vote in a way that I hope will in some way. I probably won't, but it can't hurt. Oh.
If enough people do that, Sam, it's still kind of like what happened with Zephyr Teachout. If enough people were to do that, it would make a statement. If he lost, you know, a certain percent of progressives to a Green candidate. I know it's hard for that to happen because he's also on the Working Families Party line and all that, but I think that's the way to go. I mean, look, as an Astorino, I follow it as much as I can, but I mean, I don't even hear much about it anymore. I mean, the guy's kind of a joke, right? I mean,
you know,
Cuomo's going to win by 20 or, I mean, even if Cuomo crashed hard, wouldn't he still win by 20 points?
Yeah, I would think so, but Michael has a very good idea. He just IM'd me that he is going to do a write-in candidacy for Cuomo the Lesser, and that actually wouldn't be a bad thing at all.
I'm going to do it.
How about a write-in candidacy for Mario Cuomo?
That would also be funny, but Cuomo the Lesser. I mean, can you imagine if he got like 4% of the vote was for Cuomo the Lesser?
Humiliation.
If you guys could promote that on the show, right, for example.
Yeah, I don't know if they would report it that way. I wonder. We got to check with the Board of Elections, but
I think you should really check and find out how you can screw with them, because it would be fun.
That would be super fun.
So read that quote, because I know that quote is it made me tear up a little bit when you read it to me when you first called and we weren't on yet.
When asked about him writing that there are more negatives than positives to being a famous politician's son, he said, "I wouldn't trade my father or our experiences for anything."
That's
but
nice.
Politically, yeah.
I bet you'd give him a $100,000 donation and he'd trade his dad in two seconds. But go ahead.
Okay. Short of Ken Langone coming in and asking me to, I wouldn't trade my father
dad,
or
for
our experiences
to...
for anything. But politically,
he wants my dad to work on aisle six or maybe to chop him up into pieces of wood to sell at Home Depot. Done. But okay, go ahead.
But politically, it's a negative because you get all your father's enemies and not all his friends. What's also interesting is that not only is this a delusion, but he also, out of that equation, it's really just he's not talking about electoral politics or people at all outside of close, like the insider political class.
There's an addendum to that, though, I think it's important to sort of add to it, which is if you're an unbelievable asshole, you tend to lose a lot of your dad's friends, too. that's the important addendum that I don't think he cited. And in addition to that, if you're a complete sellout, you end up becoming friends with some of your dad's enemies, like, for example, Ken Langone.
Right.
So these are the addenda. The addenda, I think we'd say, the addendus, that he is not – I'm not up on my Latin lately – that he has not added to that. I mean, and again, I'm having fun here, but that's such a stupid comment. I mean, look around anywhere from the names Clinton or Bayh or Gore on the Democratic side or Bush or Romney or anywhere else you feel like going on the Republican side. And of course, having a name gives you immediate name recognition and helps you win almost anywhere. So that's just stupid, but you know, it's Cuomo we're talking about, and he doesn't really try hard to say honest things.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning to me. I mean, it's not just stupidity. That is just complete out delusion. If you really want a good perspective on the psychology of Andrew Cuomo, I think that quote is just about all you need. But let's move on to other elections, ones that are going to have even more implications across the country. We're a couple of weeks out, and a lot has changed over the past week, or at least in terms of where the Democrats think they're going to salvage.
It's not all wonderful either, Sam.
No, it rarely is, Cliff. Now, we should remind people, look, there are six states, right, that the Republicans aim to take that would flip the Senate. Arkansas, Alaska, Colorado, West Virginia, North Carolina, Montana, right?
It was really about, yeah, I mean, there's at this point, originally there were 6-3 open seats, which were Montana, West Virginia, South Dakota, and then 3 where they felt Democrats were particularly vulnerable, which were Louisiana, Arkansas, and Alaska. And then North Carolina was a potential additional one, as were Iowa and Colorado. What has changed and, you know, and complicated things for them on some level is obviously Kentucky's been a contest. The DSCC has pulled their money there. But I'm still sticking with my prediction, by the way. And the reason why is because she just raised $4.9 million the last quarter, like a million more than McConnell. So she's still got plenty of money to be on the air. It's not like she needs the DSCC money, and they're putting in money for turnout. And I think in the end, a lot of these races, we're going to see if this Bannock Street project they've talked about that they used, the data and everything that helped Obama perform 3 to 4 points, even in some places more than that, above where he'd been polling, if that's going to work. Because that's really...
What is that called? The Banff? Say it again?
It was on... They started it for Michael Bennett, who is now the head of the DSCC, when he was running in 2010, was it? Or 2012. And they this huge sort of data operation and turnout. And it was in his race, and it was on a place called Bannock Street in Denver. So that's where this has gotten its name. And Bennett was down to that lunatic guy, I think it was 2010. What was his name? Ken Buck, by about 4 points in the last poll, 3 or 4 points, and he won by a point. So he outperformed what it was saying he was going to do by 5 points. Will that happen everywhere? Have the Republicans made some gains since then? So, you know, they certainly didn't in 2012. Their turnout was terrible then. Have they learned things? That's going to be a big question. You know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Grimes, in what I consider to be a terrible mistake, released a really stupid ad that's offensive, frankly, attacking immigration in Kentucky. And I don't really know why she did it. I don't know who the stupid consultants are who told her to do this. I really hope that doesn't depress turnout for her, because right. That might be the one way that I think she honestly still could lose. Because I think it's very close. And I think if the turnout operation is in full force there, and otherwise, I would honestly say to you, I'm close to sure as possible she would win. I really hope now that Democrats don't choose to not vote for her because of that, because I'm on enough listservs to see that there's a lot of very angry people
right.
over the language she used in that ad. I still would do it because I think, you know, what everyone thinks of her, McConnell is a unique evil in our current system, somebody who doesn't just, you know, survive by gumming up the works and helping corporate guys. There's something in his soul where he lives for this stuff. You know, he's late night strategy sessions. He's not a backbencher who just says, I just need to do what it takes to stay in Congress, so I'll vote in favor of corporations that give me money. He enjoys it. He's a bit of a sociopath. So that's where that race is. Georgia, because of this video that came out with Perdue saying how much he loves outsourcing, the last couple of polls have actually shown what's her name, Michelle Nunn ahead.
The DSCC has poured $1 million into Georgia now.
Yeah, and I think with turnout and changing demographics, I didn't have faith in her before. I now think she can win, because that statement and then his follow-up saying he was proud of it, he had nothing to be ashamed of, is terrible. Is going to hurt. I mean, remember, this is what did in Mitt Romney, you know. And so I think that's changed. But you know,
more importantly, David Perdue. This is of a kind with the narrative that had already been set with David Perdue, right? I mean,
that's right.
He this isn't just some statement that doesn't fit the existing pre-existing narrative. This guy was already seen as a Mitt Romney type guy. That tone was set in the primary. His Republican primary. So when something like this comes out that validates a pre-existing narrative, it is particularly damaging.
This is, again, just another reason why Democrats should be running economically populist campaigns 100% of the time everywhere. Because, again, as proven again and again, this stuff works. It's not just smart policy, it's smart politics. And as you said, often this is the preconceived notion of these guys, because it's true, right? And it hurt. Romney, one of the reasons it worked so well is because this is what everybody thought of him ahead of time. It's working with Perdue because this is what everybody thought of him ahead of time. There's another race right now that we're not really covering.
Wait, hold on. Before we get to that other race,
Let me just let's close out Georgia for folks. Yep. The fly in that ointment, and apparently there was a poll that came out today, Survey USA, that said that in likely voters, which is important, yep. right? Michelle Nunn is up 3 points over Purdue,
right?
48-45, but. Yep. There's a libertarian in the race who's getting 3% in that poll, and this is a runoff state, right? You need to get over 50%. Is that right?
That is a great point, yes.
And so in runoffs, Republicans tend to do better, particularly in Georgia. So this one is that's going to be a big, important race, I think.
The runoff is, but I even think, you know, it depends on turnout, depends on the rest. The big problem could be if it goes to a runoff and that's the difference in the Senate, so David Perdue could run cleanly on, if you vote for Michelle Nunn, you give Democrats control of the Senate, that could be a problem. If it's not that the deciding race, quote unquote, then I think even in a runoff, if, you know, with the demographics as they are and the turnout machine they've got, they could win. But you're right. It complicates things, no doubt. That's going to happen in Louisiana, too, and I think it's much worse news in Louisiana that you have to get 50%. Mary Landrieu is either tied or down a point or two, but it looks like it's going to go to a runoff. And in a runoff, it becomes significantly more difficult to win. And so, you know, Louisiana's close, but I wouldn't necessarily say I think we're in some trouble there, although Landrieu has shown an ability to survive. I mean, the last couple of elections, she's found a way to sneak through, sometimes even in bad years like 2002. So you never know, but I would say that Arkansas, you know, Tom Cotton is a crazy person who also has the charisma of like a boot, but it seems like just the general sort of situation there, the fact that Pryor is so much of a conservative, I mean, it certainly doesn't excite any progressive base. He's one of the few Democrats against gay marriage, one of the few Democrats who voted against background checks, is mostly against abortion rights, and won't even say he believes in evolution. That's a guy that I guess Tom Cotton could get me to vote for while holding my nose and like closing my eyes and you know, singing songs to myself so I didn't know I was doing it, maybe getting drunk. He's not an inspiring candidate in that, you know, he's Ben Nelson in Arkansas.
So Alaska,
I think it's harder because polling is crazy up there because it's so much harder to get the populations. Mark Begich smartly came out for a very populist, you know, increasing Social Security. I think that's helped. I think that's one we could potentially pull out. Very close. It's hard to you know, I think that's one that's close enough that perhaps turnout puts us above.
Right.
But it's hard.
Speaking of Social Security, I want to go back one moment to Mary Landrieu. Now she has just come out, seeing that she's basically in trouble here, she has just come out with an ad knocking Cassidy's plan to raise the retirement age to 70. So, you know, some.
Why did you guys have to wait to the last minute for this? I guess because they're trying to appease Wall Street.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Their whole campaign should be run on this. I mean, the whole damn thing. I mean, look how well Zephyr Teachout did just talking about breaking up some, you know, bringing back trust busting. If they were running all of their campaigns on Social Security, increasing Social Security, trust busting, you know, a couple of things like this in our current age right now of two big banks and people wanting to privatize Social Security, I think almost every Democrat would win. But
yep.
That would take some intelligence that we don't seem to have, or at least people purposely don't want to have. So you're right about that. That may put Landrieu over the line. But the problem is that I don't think she's going to get to 50%.
Too late.
She may be ahead.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, if this were going to be decided, you know, right away in November, I'd say I would have more faith in her winning that race. You know, and I should say with, you know, I mean, Pryor, I suppose, has a chance, too, with the turnout machine. But it's tough. And the reason why I would say I have more faith in this turnout effort, not just because they did it for Obama in 2012, but already early mail-in voting that's going on, and early voting has Democrats in a bunch of states, figures have come out that show Democratic voting way up over where it was.
Well, let's get to that, because that's particularly the story out of Iowa. But let's go to Colorado for a moment. You've got
before Colorado, though, I want to say before, you know, that you better give me my due for South Dakota, because remember, I was talking that race before anyone, baby. And now
Well, no, all right. Well, we haven't got to South Dakota yet, so
I'm trying to give you my due. Don't give me my due. I'm
trying to go vaguely alphabetical here, buddy.
Oh, okay.
All right. Colorado.
So Colorado, it's hard to get. I guess Cory Gardner is that charismatic a candidate, which I always keep hearing, because the guy's a pathological liar. He finally did get called out in his debate the other day for saying, no, the personhood bill I signed on to isn't going to outlaw abortion. And, I mean, you're just like, what are you talking about? And he just basically, that just shows you the point we've gotten to where he thinks he can look at the press and just lie. Say, well, no, it's just a way of stating that I'm in favor of life. And he's like, well, it's not going to outlaw all abortion. It's not going to outlaw birth control. Actually, that's exactly what it's going to do. And I don't know if most people saw that. But debate the other night, it's a shame we have to do this because this is the media's job. But the two guys, did you see this? The video of that, Sam?
I didn't.
Okay, well, the two guys doing the debate questioning, I mean, I wish I had it in front of me right now. I could get it to quote it. The guy was like, who started asking him, said, we're not going to debate whether this would outlaw abortion and forms of birth control here. Your co-sponsors in the bill say it would. The National Right to Life Committee says it would. People who are opponents of yours say it would. Everybody says it would but you. And what does it tell us about you?
I did see that clip.
Either don't understand it or you're being dishonest. That's basically what the guy said.
Yeah, that was actually very impressive, I thought.
It was. I just wish that's what media is supposed to do all the time.
Right.
And they don't. So we haven't seen whether that'll have an effect on the polls. I don't know. But Gardner has been ahead, no doubt. And that's a race where, they started on Bannock Street in Denver, right? This project, we'll need that. And it's just so hard to understand. I mean, Mark Udall has, I think, fit Colorado very well. He's been very sort of libertarian on privacy issues, which has made progressives happy. He's a little more moderate on some other issues. But, I mean, look at the guy with his salt and pepper hair and the way he looks like he's from central casting from being from Colorado. You know what I mean? And obviously comes from a political family. And I think it's amazing to me they may replace him with this guy who, again, we're talking about Colorado here. We're not talking about Alabama. And Gardner had the 10th most conservative voting record in the House. I'm talking about more conservative than Steve King, than Michelle Bachmann. I mean, that they're about to potentially send this person to the Senate is just unbelievable. But right now we're down there. That would be the only way of saying it, honestly. Hopefully that debate performance as well as turnout changes things.
There's two factors here that we should also talk about. You've got an independent running who is polling in the mid to high, single digits. And some of that seems to be coming from Udall more than Cory Gardner. One.
Right.
So we'll see how that plays out. But here's the other thing that may mitigate some of these numbers. In 2013, there was a Colorado law passed to protect the right to vote. All registered voters get their ballot in the mail, and there is expanded voting in Colorado. So you've got over 3.6 million Colorado voters who are getting a ballot sent to them. I think it starts around now, frankly.
Right.
In 2010, there was only 1.8 million votes cast. So it's likely we're going to see more of a turnout in this election, and that I think is that's going to have big implications, right? I mean,
I think the mail-in voting in Colorado, by instituting that, it has been one of the states. That's why it would be such a tragedy if this goon got elected, because he'd be so out of step with the direction that state. That state, I think of a state like Minnesota too as another one, because it's right next to Wisconsin, and Colorado is right next to Arizona. Near these states have been heading in exactly the wrong direction, and yet these are a few states where they've embraced sanity during the 2010 backlash and still elected moderate to progressive governors, and state legislatures were still in the hands of Democrats, and where they passed actually really smart legislation, whether it's on guns or gay rights or a variety of things. But it would be just such a step in the wrong direction, Edie, to send this guy to Washington, who's so unbelievably right wing.
All right, so let's move to Iowa. Joni Ernst, who is
every bit the lunatic Gardner is,
right, and maybe more in some respects.
And the
story coming out of here, Bruce Braley is trailing her by a couple of points, depending on which poll you look at. And it is...
It seems like it may have tightened up a little bit. There was a point where it was looking out of reach, where it looked like he was heading towards 3-4 points down in a few polls. I don't know if this is just margin of error stuff and means nothing, but the more recent ones have shown him down around 1. And that's certainly, you know, an amount that that good turnout could make up for. And you pointed out the early voting there.
Now the Democrats are saying that over 170,000 Iowans have already voted, which is a 63% increase over where we were in 2010. That sounds like a lot, frankly. And according to them, their model says that they're bringing in significantly more non-2010 voters than Republicans are. Now, I'm going to go through the numbers. And who knows, you know, who knows how much of that is spin versus what? Now, the value of spinning at this point for a guy like Braley deals with another story that is really troubling to me. Apparently, Tom Harkin is sitting on
$2.4 million.
$2.4 million that he raised for his elections. He is legally allowed to transfer this to a charity, which would be, and the charity of his choice turns out to be
the one named after him,
the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. Now, this is so sad.
You know, it's like just when you've got somebody who's progressive, who you've really loved because they've been so great for the time they've been in Congress, and then he's got to go and do this at the end.
It really is stunning. I mean, look, you know, I can understand he doesn't think that he can raise another $2 million if he's not a senator, and that his center at Drake University or wherever it is, you know, won't get built or whatnot. I mean, but God, man. So give a million and a half and just say,
right,
you guys promised
to
help me raise some money for this down the road.
Give half of it to Braley and Udall or, you know, whatever, and or at least Braley in your home state, and the other half. I know this is, I've seen this on a local level with campaigns I've worked on, when you've got people with huge war chests, and you think to yourself, oh well, yeah, they're going to believe in the party, and then they don't, and it's just, you're right, that is maddening, because that is a that race is very, very close, and I still think hugely winnable, even though Braley has, frankly, not run the best campaign and made a number of mistakes along the way, said some really dumb things. If he gets elected, I mean, we're going to get to South Dakota. I would say if he gets elected, the only one more progressive or as progressive as him running is Rick Weiland.
Yeah.
I mean, Braley would be the most progressive person we would be sending to this new Senate.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a hugely important race, because we're not just talking about a moderate versus a right-winger. Like, he and Joni Ernst are such polar opposites that it makes almost twice as much difference, right? I mean, because you're not just sending – it's not the difference between a center-left and a center-right. It is very progressive versus crazy.
And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Braley turns out to be to the left of Harkin, frankly.
I wouldn't either. Actually, he's been great on a lot of stuff. So,
all right, so let's move on. Iowa, we go to Kansas. Seems like Pat Roberts is still, you know, slightly in the lead over Greg Orman. What's your sense of that?
I mean, he was behind for a while.
Right.
It's hard to sort of tell. I mean, have you seen a bunch of polls showing Roberts in the lead?
I haven't seen a bunch of polls showing him in the lead. I've just seen it seems like it's been tightening a little bit, but I don't know.
Okay, because you said Roberts in the lead. The ones I had seen still had Orman in the lead, but they've tightened.
Yeah.
You know, they're up by a couple points. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know what has to be done there. It's going to be close in the end. We have to hope that Orman can bring that one home. I think, you know, that one's tougher because the Democrats aren't doing turnout there, as far as I know. There may be some people, but it's certainly not the machine. So Orman's got to do this on his own, you know, and I hope. But, I think at that point, that's gotten close enough that one could go almost either way.
North Carolina?
I think Hagan's going to hang in there. They've spent a ton of money going after her. They're still spending. The NRSC just dropped $6 million more there. Independent groups I've been looking at, you know, have been going after her more than it's amazing how much money they've dumped in there against her. But the trends in that state are in our direction. She actually seems like she's run a pretty good campaign, and you know, but I still have yet to see a poll that shows Tillis even tied with her. All of them have shown her up. They've got the turnout operation there. It's almost like it never left since, you know, the convention in Charlotte. I would am pretty confident saying I think Kay Hagan wins.
And South Dakota.
Yeah, so I was kidding. I don't really deserve that much credit. I only deserve more credit than the DSCC, who right. seems to not be able to read polling for some reason. I mean, I don't know. I put certain numbers next to each other and can do kind of basic math and say, wow, 4 points are, you know, isn't really that far apart, for example. I mean, you know, that was a race that it seems like whatever the issue with Harry Reid and Daschle fighting, and what, you know, because Reid wants somebody different. I mean, again, petty stuff, right?
Yeah.
That we've discussed already so far, and not what you'd expect from a statesman. Instead of just, I mean, Weiland has run an incredibly progressive campaign. There's 311 towns in South Dakota. He's the only person in the history of running for officer who's been to every one. You know, this would be such a huge victory, and I think at this point, Round, they're propping up a little bit. They just put a bunch of money in there, but the EB-5 scandal is everywhere. It's very understandable for money. They gave visas to certain Chinese investors to be able to get in. When you mix the sort of toxic situation of people with problems with immigration and, you know, Chinese investors and things of that sort, you know, Rounds, I think, is done. I think at this point, do we put in center-right Larry Pressler win, or does progressive Rick Weiland win? And there's a whole bunch of people sitting, because the internals tell you that of the people that have gone from Rounds to Pressler, Rounds is hugely underwater, whereas Weiland isn't. So if they were to leave Pressler, they would probably go to Weiland. And then there's also an independent on the right shaving off about 5% of the vote. So I think it's going to be either Pressler or Weiland. I think Weiland's got a great shot. Now you've got Mayday PAC in there, and you've got the DSCC in there. I think he can pull it out. I'm gonna say he does.
All right. So I'm going to put that in the W column there. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. According to you, Democrats maintain the Senate by one.
I think they do. I think it's going to be really close, though. And I mean, because, you know, the two of the open states, West Virginia and Montana, sadly, are gone. As I said, Arkansas and Louisiana are really tough. Alaska is, I think, baggage canola. It's hard to know with everything there. But even if we were, let's say, to lose all of those, you know, and if we lost Colorado, too, which would be terrible, you know, if we lost, you know, then I still think that we pick up a few of these other ones. So, I think they're going to hold on to it, although it's going to be really close.
All right, let's talk briefly. We just got a couple more minutes here about Ebola playing in the race. I mean, this is such a weird topic because, on one hand, it's obviously very, very problematic as what's happening in West Africa. It is also, I think, a valid news story in terms of what is our preparedness, not necessarily for Ebola, but for these type of things in general. It shows there are some genuine public policy questions here. You know, I think it's a legitimate question. Do you ban flights or not? My personal opinion is I'll defer to the experts in this manner because it's not I am not a, you know.
Right. And that was my response.
It's not like an opinion on this. It's not a. This is a function of like what the experts say. And as far as I can tell, the experts say, like, look, it's much the way that you end these type of things is to end it at the source. And if you ban flights, you're making it much harder for NGOs and aid people to get in to West Africa, because then you move into like the charter plane system, which is far more expensive. And, you know, these things take money. And then there's the issues of. They have porous borders. And in fact, shall we play this audio? We'll save this audio. But they have porous borders. So in other words, if you're leaving one of those three countries in West Africa, you can leave and then just get on a flight somewhere else. And there's no direct flights from there to the U.S. anyways. And so it would be very hard to manage. And in this way, at least you have some ability to get information and control and know where these things are happening. You know, there's no
There's no black market or gray market in terms of the travel. But from a media standpoint, the other problem with this is that people are freaking out.
Well, I mean, yeah, and you said what I said, which is, you know, we could all act like the Republicans here, you know, and be like, well, I'm not a scientist. Of course, they're only not scientists when it comes to global warming because they don't want to do anything about it. What I do is in situations where I think that there's something that I can't understand because I'm not an expert in it, certain statistics and things that I haven't been trained in, is I trust experts. And so my reaction was too, not based on racism, not based on anything, just based on common sense that if there was a reason to stop flights from coming in, if that were to, if people, the experts would tell me that would prevent it, I would be in favor of that. But they're not. They're saying it in fact will hamper efforts to stop it. So I have to trust them. And this is why we need experts. This is why we need regulators, people to be in positions of power like, oh, I don't know, the Surgeon General, you know, people who understand these things, who are doctors and who are economists and who are professionals. And this to me is the whole, you know, intellectual bankruptcy of the Republican world, really, their point in being since Reagan took over, which is just get government off your back, get rid of government, everything will work better. Because what we need to do is just get rid of the experts, get rid of the scientists, the doctors, the economists, the people actually understand what the hell they're talking about. And, you know, Louis Gohmert will better help us understand things.
I sure will.
Yeah. The guy who said that the Democrats are waging a war on nurses right now. Mind you, this is in the home state of this idiot in Texas, where, you know, fertilizer plants blow up entire towns because they don't regulate them. I mean, you know, they have the highest child rate of children, you know, uninsured in the country. It was before Obamacare about 21-22%. It's basically a barely functioning banana republic in Texas. So they're really shocking that protocols and other things wouldn't be put into place. And in a hospital in Texas is where things and stuff would happen with Ebola. It hasn't happened in Atlanta, mind you. But this is what happens. And of course, Louis Gohmert finds a way to blame the left. In the end, this is the price you pay. Which when you need the CDC, when you need the FDA, when you need people like that, it's real fun to talk about small government and deregulation until you need these people to prevent you from getting E. coli and prevent you from getting, you know, the entovirus that was going around the Midwest here and other things like that. You need experts to tell you what you do to prevent these things. And Ebola falls into that too. Even if it's less of a threat, it's still something where you want experts, you know, if you're not going to go into a panic, you're just going to be rational about it. Tell me what I should do. You know, and that's what we don't have. We don't have a Surgeon General because the NRA blocked him because he thinks guns are a public health issue, which, of course, you know, clearly they're not. I mean, we only have kids dying at about 20 times the rate of any other high-income country. So, you know, and you tie all that together, and it's all this right-wing philosophy. You know, and the last thing I can throw out there is, again, the kind of stuff that made me just want to scream and punch a wall that you and I have talked about during the various parts of the Obama administration, that in the end, he does again what you expect, which is, they were attacking czars before, but now John McCain, who attacked czars, calls for a czar, other people call for a czar. He doesn't stand up and say, put my damn Surgeon General in there right now, because that's his job, and stop doing the bidding of an extremist group on this. He appoints a czar who's Ron Klain, who's a political guy and not a medical guy. And so this whole sort of, you know, this whole dysfunctional dance plays itself out again. We have radical right-wingers attacking the government, not allowing government to function, and not willing to compromise on anything. And we have Obama responding by doing exactly what they ask, which in the end is a Band-Aid and a public relations move. It's not going to accomplish a thing.
Yeah. Cliff Schecter, always a pleasure.
On that high note, hey, everybody, have a great weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Happy Ebola weekend for you.
Happy Ebola.
All right. We'll see you later, Cliff. Thanks for taking the time today, buddy.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you.
Have a good one. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Isabel Gillies, best-selling author, tween author, and memoir author, actor, bon vivant, will be joining us ostensibly to give me a film recommendation for the weekend. We'll be right back after this.
Slash.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Folks, it is your support that makes this program possible and will help us out big time with our big move and our added office expenditures. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Just head over to majority.fm. Want to do a one-off donation? I think we're going to try and do a fundraiser very shortly, but we'll figure out how the details on that shortly. Meanwhile, folks, on the phone, we have the namesake of this theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Hello, Isabel.
Hello.
What's happening?
Wait, I think we should totally do a fundraiser.
I love your attitude. How is it that you are more engaged and more on board with this stuff than even the producers who sit in this office?
You know, that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, it doesn't surprise you. Why is that, Isabel?
Because because they're in there all the time. I'm just, you know, come in, get excited by the thought of a fundraiser. They probably have to do all the grunt work. I would just come in and, like, you know, we'd have fun talks or something, get some celebrities to come.
Oh, really? Now you're going to help me get some of your celebrity friends?
Yeah, let's do it. You have more celebrity friends than I do.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. What'd you call me, a bon vivant?
Yeah, I did.
I'll take it.
Yeah, why not? What's happening with
that,
the book? What's happening with Starry Night? How's it doing?
It's good. It's good, I think. It got a good review in the New York Times.
What? I didn't see that.
It did.
Why didn't you send that
out?
Good.
Well, let me read it to you right now. Let's read the last line. Ready?
Yeah, do you have a tattoo
on your...
New York
Book Review.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
The Short List, YA crossover. Starry Night, Farrar, Straus, and Giroux.
Wait a second. This is okay. A YA crossover? So it's a young adult crossover? What is a crossover
this
to?
It's a crossover. I guess it's a new, you know, like, anyone can read it. Adults can read it, YA.
All right. Cool.
Okay. Gillies handles this novel about finding one's strength and growing up deftly and evocatively. It was nice. It was good.
Yeah.
So that was good. And then I think the kids are into it. I've gotten some nice, you know, my kid couldn't put it down. She read it all night. It's good. It's fine. I'm on to the next.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that. When I reached out to you to come in. You were like, I'm writing.
I'm writing.
Right back on it.
Yeah, I got a good idea.
And is this I know you don't like to let the air out of the tires, as it were, but is this a YA crossover?
It's YA. It's just YA. Now I'm into the teens.
Hmm.
I'll do something else, but I just got an idea, so then I ran with it. It's called Link.
Wow, don't tell me too much. I know you don't like the...
I'm not. That's all I'm telling you. Link.
What does that mean?
It's just the name of it.
All right. L-I-N-K.
No. But here's the thing. When it came out, the book came out, then I thought, and this probably happened, you know, I don't know how... I had to cook for a month. I just had to cook and parent and get the kids into school. And I think... It was. I just needed to regenerate. But during that time of making stews and pies, I got the idea. So I think that's how the brain works. I think you can't just go all the time.
I'll tell you, that's the hardest thing about doing this show is that you
the daily
don't
get, show.
There's a lot of reaping, but not as much sowing.
Well, because you, well, I guess it, but you're inspired by what goes on in on a daily basis.
So oh, yeah, it's kind of... so inspirational out there right now.
I was just listening. I do what the experts say, too. The experts tell me don't panic, I don't panic. The experts tell me to panic, I panic.
And what are your experts telling you now?
On Ebola?
Yeah.
Same thing they're telling you.
Right. Don't panic.
Don't panic.
Now you're.
So I'm not panicking.
You're generally on the spectrum of neuroses. You're generally a little bit up there, and so if you're not panicking, nobody should.
Well, these massive doctors are saying really, truly, truly, do not panic. And what am I going to do? I mean, it just takes too much effort to panic.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're really, how am I going to prepare, like, not fly or not? I don't even understand what I'd have to do if I was going to panic.
Just wear
not
a hazmat
go
suit.
Go outside or
hazmat suit when you're picking
it's
up.
It's only
the
if they're throwing up on you,
right?
You know, right?
But yeah, but you don't know when people are going to throw up on you.
Or if you're working in the, I mean, it's not, you know.
I would just stay away from people who are vomiting on you. That's what I would do.
What?
Rick?
Did I lose you?
What? Are you there?
Oh, my God. I can't hear you.
You can't hear me? Isabel?
I can't hear you.
You can?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Isabel, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, I know. But now we're using a different system right now. I don't know what happened there.
I couldn't hear you, and then I panicked, and then I thought of my survival instincts, and I went and got onto the majority report on my computer. I could hear that you couldn't hear me.
Why not on your... I could hear you.
Well, I couldn't hear you.
Now, why didn't you just get onto the app?
Because I'm not near my cell phone.
Really?
No, I'm near my computer.
I don't believe that for a moment.
It's true.
So, Isabel, so give us a sense of what it's like to be an esteemed YA writer. Like, what are you doing now that's different?
Well, here's something, and it will lead to my movie. So, I'm not doing anything differently, but because I'm just starting to write again, and it's all fine. But this week, I had a rough parenting week. And I think when you go on to Netflix to choose a movie...
Right.
Subconsciously, you're choosing something that might reflect what's going on in your own life.
Interesting.
So even though I'm thinking of, if I'm not going on the show, I'm just choosing one just to watch, that's even more direct that whatever speaks to me is the mood I'm in, right?
Right.
And then, but then I think, so if I'm choosing one specifically to check it out, maybe for the show, I would not think that I would be driven by my own life, rather what the audience might appreciate. But I chose one that I think was a reflection of what was going on in my own life, and metaphorically it made a lot of sense to choose this movie.
Ooh, this is going to be so in other words, this is going to be pretty revealing.
Yes. It is. Of what my week was like, because I had a rough parenting week, and you know, I didn't know. Sometimes with parenting, as you well know, sometimes you just don't know what to do, or something happens, and you sort of have a.
Can you be more explicit?
Well, no. I just like school, homework. It wasn't any health crisis or anything, but just like kids, puberty, tweens. It gets sticky and complicated, and sort of heartbreaking, and I was having a rough time. So. And we got through it and everything, but it's rough. My older kid was, didn't do his homework. He did his homework, but then he didn't hand it in with his name on it, so he had to go to detention. Well, it's just like, it was rough having dyslexia. My kid has dyslexia. It's hard. So, and ready for this, I was so dyslexic that parenting him is hard because it triggers all this crazy memories or feelings from when I was little, so it's not like, or younger, so it's not like you're parenting someone that's different from you that you can see objectively. It feels very much like it's you, so that causes great panic, and or it does me sometimes. Anyway.
Wow. All right, well, that sounds like there was a lot of tumult this week. How did the puberty come into it, though?
Because he's going through puberty.
All right. And so it sounds like he didn't hand in his homework because he was trying to hook up with a girl.
No. He had his homework. He just, like, forgot to hand it in. And this is it's all low executive function stuff, you know. And
low executive function?
Can't remember. Can't remember to put the notebook that you need doesn't go in the backpack, and then it screws you up. And when you're in fourth grade, that's sort of not such a big deal. But when you're in an older grade, then it is a big deal. And
all right.
Just the whole thing.
So what did on Golden Pond?
No, funny you should mention water. I chose a movie new to Netflix, mm-hmm. Total Streaming, but it's also a trend right now, I believe, in the world of movies.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
It's the movie All Is Lost.
Never heard of it.
Yes, Robert Redford.
Oh,
himself.
The guy out on the ship alone.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that was actually supposed to be a very good movie. It's just him, right?
Yes. No dialogue.
Wow.
There's like two lines in it. And so I picked it because, and you know, it's survival. It's one person in the elements. It's trying to figure out how to deal and how to get by and how to get through. And so I had never really wanted to see it in the theater,
mm-hmm.
because the thought of one person in the middle of the Indian Ocean scares me. Like I couldn't, you know, Unbroken, that book. Remember that book about the World War II warrior who gets lost in the ocean? Anyway,
nope.
I couldn't finish it. It scared me so badly. So
Now, Isabel, wait a second. Let me stop here for a moment, okay?
Yeah.
Now, this is a little bit more telling than maybe we should know, because here you have a situation where you talk about, like, it was a very difficult time with my kid. He had a very tough time this past week. And then you talk, then you recommend a movie about just one person. Where's the what does this say about, like?
No, because it's the one person who's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out. But what about, I mean, there's another person involved here, right? Your kids. Oh, Isabel, I think we've found the problem right here. I mean,
No therapy this week for you.
We've cracked this case.
It's my own fault for bringing psychology into this, but. No, to broaden it, it's about, the movie is about survival and figuring it out and using your all many parts of your brain and he's many ideas and trying different things, and one thing works and the other thing doesn't work, and ultimately what happens is very interesting.
Don't spoil it. No spoiler.
Why not?
All right, so it's on Netflix now, streaming.
It is streaming. I guess it is 3 months or something, 6 months. But it's and it's short. It's an hour and 45 minutes, so it's not
95 minute movie. Yeah, well, there's only one. You know, there's only a little bit of dialogue, I guess.
Yeah, but it's. I think it was nominated. I don't know if it was best.
Is it a good movie?
Is it a good movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, sold.
Another movie in that same genre is 27 Hours.
27 Hours? Is that the one with the phone booth or something like that?
No.
Oh.
This is the one about the guy who hikes into the mountains.
And
he falls down into a crevasse.
Right. Oh, and he eats his arm off, practically.
Well, yeah, he doesn't eat it, but...
Oh, I guess I don't want to be a spoiler alert.
I
saw that
movie. So that's a similar... You saw that movie?
I did see that movie, yeah.
Well, how can you remember? how do you not remember
I remember. I remember now.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't remember the title. I don't remember titles of movies. I don't even remember the title of that Robert Redford movie you just recommended.
All
On Golden Pond, was it?
Do you know that Robert Redford, good criminy, he is, woo, what a movie star.
What do you say?
What a movie star.
What were you really going to say there? You're still like, you still find him like attractive.
Yeah.
That's what you were going with that.
He's got
pick
something.
That up.
You know,
he's old enough to be your grandfather, I think.
I know, but that, who cares? But, I mean, I don't want to take him down, but you can see how he's just this glowy person. So listen to this. So
did
one time
take
I was.
Him down?
I was. Yeah, all right.
What does that mean? Wait. What does that mean? Take
I don't
want to,
like, have a relationship with him right now. Just, God, Sam, come on.
No, but Isabel, I'm just curious as to, like, we got into this whole psychology thing here, and we found out that you had trouble with your kids, so you immediately want a movie
trouble.
About being
any
alone
parenting.
In an ocean, and then you're talking about you're attracted to a guy who could be the age of your grandfather, and then when you talk about getting involved with him, you call it take him down.
Oh, come on, Sam. I'm just talking about what everybody knows is Robert Redford is like has real movie star. You know, he's just a movie star. It's like one of those great.
Yeah,
he's like,
it's true.
You know, he
I
really
would take
is.
Him down.
And, okay, good. Thank you. But now listen to this.
Yeah.
When I was 13 or 14, 14 or 15, I was helping out at a benefit for Natural Resources Defense Council.
Uh-huh.
And I was selling raffle tickets. And it was a big, huge room. And Robert Redford walked in. This is what, like, when your fundraiser, this is what we have to do. We have to get someone like Robert Redford. He walked in, and I swear to God, I thought that there was a, you know how when there's a camera, there's a light on? I thought a light had gone on in the room. And it was Robert Redford. Had such
presence.
Glow. He has such presence. It was as if someone turned on a different light in the room, honest to God.
You know, that's true about
it.
There's some people who are like that. I actually remember I had my mom won like an auction in Worcester when I was, I guess, a teenager. And she won a lunch with John Kerry. And we came down to Washington and we had lunch with John Kerry. And I
You're
gotta
kidding.
Say, like, going around with the senators, most of the senators, not all of them, but they have like this sort of like sheen over them, like this aura that follows them around. It's weird.
Did John Kerry?
He did at the time. Now, you know, now I'm a little bit more jaded. And also my eyes are probably not as good, so I don't pick up on it as much.
But don't you think that's because to get elected and to go that far in the public eye, don't you think? I think you do have to have a quality like that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it could be you're just sociopathy, but who knows?
No, I think that's really interesting. And his partner in, you know, his movie, you know, Paul Newman, one time I was walking home from school and I was on Fifth Avenue up in the 90s. And it was by myself. It was like 4 in the afternoon. I was walking home from school. And on the other side of the block, I watched this man, who also could have been my grandfather, you know, walking towards me. And I was like, oh, my God, who's this guy? Who is this guy? I must have been 16. It was Paul Newman.
Wow.
And he was electrifying. And he was in a yellow sweater. Do you want to hear one more Paul Newman story?
Yeah. Is this the one where you take him down?
No, it's not me. So Paul Newman, I guess, lived in a town in Connecticut. And a friend's mother was in an ice cream store.
Yeah.
And Paul Newman walked in, and she was doing the exchange of money. She was buying her ice cream. Paul Newman walked in and got behind her in line. And she gave the ice cream guy the money, and he gave her – she had her wallet in her hand, and he gave her the ice cream cone, and she was so – undone by Paul Newman that she put her ice cream cone in her pocketbook instead of her wallet.
I like that story.
All right,
so
story too.
So what's the name of the movie again?
All is Lost.
All is Lost.
Robert Redford.
Done.
It's really worth it, and for everybody out there, and you too in the studio, you guys, it does have this quality of that we all go through life with, whether it's with your kids or your job or your you know, whatever is sort of you're navigating, to be deft in using all this different parts of your brain and your fight for life, kind of
survival,
you know?
Instinct.
You gotta, your survival instinct. It is. It's your survival instinct. At the same time, it's also this. It's survival, but it's also using all your human facility, all those things that you've learned, your academic part of your brain too. So it's not just like this. I'm a human. I have to get through because I'm an animal. It's also marries that feeling with this. What have I learned? What am I good at? How am I going to attack this problem in front of me?
I love it.
It's really good.
I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it this weekend.
You'll like it, Sam.
Almost can guarantee it. Isabel Gillies, yeah. Always a pleasure.
It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful weekend. Have a good one, everyone.
Thanks, Isabel. All right.
All right. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. We got a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Don't we, Matt?
We certainly do.
All right, let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song while I try and figure out what's going on with our audio.
All right, the Jimmy Reefer Cake song is called Islam in a Race, and there's a bit of a backstory here. This is from Jimmy Reefer Cake. This is my adaptation of a Nate from Texas song created at his request and for the enjoyment of all. Whoops, what happened there? Okay, well, geez, we're having problems all across the board here. All right, here we go.
Sing a song.
Matt, what's going on?
Here we go.
Now I'm going to sing a song from Nate from Texas, our friend Nate Glenn on YouTube. I'm really sick of these racists who say they aren't racist, too. Thanks, brother. I'm a scientific atheist, but I got a redneck heart. Not a big fan of the Jews, but I love to watch Bill Maher. Moderate or terrorist, or fundamentalist too. They're all bound together by that same Islamic glue. We're gonna have to deal with them because they're all the same. Whenever there's a problem, you know they are to blame. We'll drop Mohammed as a bomb or as a pile of poo. And when they get offended, then we'll have a good excuse. Go on, boom! Can't call me a racist because Islam ain't a race. You can't call me a racist because Islam ain't a race. You might say I'm prejudiced or that I'm full of hate, but you can't call me a racist because Islam ain't race. No matter what they do or say, they're all a damn disgrace. Wherever they may live, I say blow up the whole damn place. They've all got their funny hats and they got that fuzzy face. Well, you can't call me a racist because Arabs are, Islam not a race. Islam's not a race.
A little
so that's why I hate them all.
A little collaboration between Majority Report and listeners.
Yes, I love it. I love it. It's like a super group. It's like the Super Stations. Number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I guess today will be a Freebie Friday. All right, number 646-257-3920. Got a little bit of sound. So earlier we were talking about this notion of whether or not there should be a flight ban into the United States. And I mentioned, flight ban sequestration, I guess, into the United States from the West African nations that are dealing with Ebola. My sense is that because the experts in this sort of thing say that it would be ineffective and possibly more problematic that we shouldn't do it. I know that is a controversial position in today's society, because why would you listen to experts in the field? Their reasons range from you need to stop Ebola from its source, and if you halted commercial airlines from going in there, you would make it virtually or much harder for NGOs and for aid workers to get in, because then you'd have to start doing charters, and that's far more expensive, prohibitively expensive for a lot of these NGOs. Another reason is that in this instance, we can now track people, even if they lie about their situation. We now know who's on those flights with them, right? Because we're paying attention to those flights. Whereas if these people are willing to lie, then they're probably also willing to exit their countries through their very porous borders and would then make it to the United States, except for we wouldn't know how they got here. On and on. So, of course, the Republicans, and we will talk about this in a moment, the Republicans are using this rather than to deal with sort of some legitimate public policy issues. They are trying to make some partisan hay out of this, because there is some evidence that this will help them in the elections. But the problem is they're also really stupid sometimes. Thus bringing us to Representative Marsha Blackburn, who doesn't seem to get the idea as to why you wouldn't do a ban, but she hears something that makes her think that she knows what she's talking about. What's beautiful about this clip is the combination between Marsha Blackburn's total ineptitude and Marsha Blackburn's complete certainty that she's not inept. Play this clip. Here she is interviewing, or I should say questioning, CDC Director Thomas Frieden.
For 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Frieden, I want to be sure I heard you right. You just said to Chairman Upton that we cannot have flight restrictions because of a porous border. So do we need to worry about having an unsecure southern and northern border? Is that a big part of this problem?
I was referring to the border of the three countries in Africa.
You're referring
Liberia,
to that border, not our
Guinea,
porous border.
And Sierra Leone.
Mr. Wagner, would it help you all, the Border Patrol, if we secured the southern border and eliminated illegal entry?
Well, travelers coming across the southern border, like the northern border, we're going to, you know, query their information in our databases. We're going to ask them their travel history, where they're coming from, how they arrived in the country there.
Okay.
They're
yes
coming
or
from,
no was
so.
Sufficient. I need to move on.
So she just hears the word border, assumes that it has to do with our border. I mean, this is a question. She starts off by saying, when we were talking about the flight bans, well, what did we are talking about flight bans? How do you tie that in to the notion of people driving or walking across our porous borders in the north and the south?
Excuse me, all. I have several stupid questions and a limited amount of time, so I would deal with a nice, simple answer to my mind-blowingly stupid question. Thank you.
Well, it's,
I mean,
know what? Okay. That's a little too there's too much due deference there in that.
I mean, literally, what almost had to have happened is she just tuned out and
said
the
yes
word
or
border.
No. But she just, I said yes or no. Yes or no?
No.
Excuse me, Mr. Frieden. Africa is or is not a country. Am I wrong?
Dr. Frieden, did you not say West African nations? Okay, now, did you not use two words to describe those areas, that geographic area, yes or no? Okay, now, do we not always use also two words to describe, let's say, Latin America? Okay, I rest my case.
So you're talking about the West African nation of Guatemala. And is it not true that there are children from that region who are crossing the border illegally with Ebola and attempting to convert us to Islam? And again, a yes or no will do nicely.
Congresswoman,
again, yes or no, please.
I'm not
8-year-olds
for
trying to give us Ebola and convert us to Islam.
I must hurry and get your answer so I can send out my email blast.
We're clipping this on YouTube, and the fools back in my district are looking at it. So, frankly, it really don't matter whether or not what I just said is completely nonsensical and whether or not you debunk me. That's really not the point of the exercise,
in fact,
gentlemen.
I'm going to ask you a yes or no question that it's impossible for you to answer yes or no. I'm going to see your question. I'm going to be indignant. Then this will be clipped, and I will send it in my email blast, and I will make probably upwards around six figures in quick donations because of your intransigence.
I might also even get a Steve Malzberg clip out of it. He's that nice. Well, is he a Jewish fella? He's up there in New York, and they got a Newsmax show, and I just love going on his program as well as the larger ones. After this all over, I'm going to be a pharma lobbyist to make more than all of you ever even have seen in your lives.
That's right.
So anyways, on to my next question. Should we close our little Northern Liberian border? It's a serious question.
Let's go to the phones.
Do you want to do this Fox News one we've been holding on to? Okay.
Nathan Ray, welcome to the program, Nathan.
Hello, Carol. How are you doing? Nathan from the UK again.
Hey, how are you, Nathan? You got to back off your mic a little bit.
Okay. Is that a bit better?
Not so good, but what do you got?
Well, I'm just calling because I have a bit of a complaint about how some of you Americans are. See the Brits in films and movies and TV and things.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you. You have a complaint about Americans by how we portray Brits on TV, is that it?
Yeah, well, it's not so much how we portray us, it's the comments that I get.
You know what?
It's just cutting off so much. Yes. Like you just keep cutting off.
You know, that's one of the other problems with all the Brits, Nathan, is their upload speeds on their Skype is not good. Oh, there you go. I'm sorry, Nathan. Send it as an IM. What's the the St. Louis activist. Is that what you want to talk about? Or the Fox?
No, the Fox.
Okay.
One.
So here we have Fox and Friends trying to find every angle here. Now, the reason why, and I'll talk about this in a second, reason why we actually have data as to what the value is for a situation like this, this Ebola crisis, if you want to really call it a crisis. I frankly don't think it's a crisis, but for in West Africa at this point. But here we have Fox and Friends trying to sort of just look at all the reasons why we haven't been able to, I don't know what, magically get rid of this or whatever it is. But, well, let's just play this. This is Steve Doocy and the Fox and Friends crew explaining why ultimately we don't have a Surgeon General.
We're talking to Dr. Somadi about
that. Dr. Somadi, earlier we interviewed him, and he was saying there's no medical reason why we're not banning flights. So the question is this a political reason or policy?
Except for all the medical reasons.
There's no medical reason. I don't even know what that means. I think what she means to say, there's no health reason why we're not banning flights. Now, that's debatable. Like we said, like you can't get NGO people in there if you ban flights. Even if it's charter flights, the cost is prohibitive. But, and then there's also sort of, I don't know that you would call these health reasons, but you're going to create a gray market in terms of people sneaking into the United States. So, but they found somebody who's, there's no health reason or medical reason, but continue.
Politics getting involved, as usual for the White House. Well, the president, who doesn't like photo ops, does a photo op meeting with top officials to discuss Ebola on the day after he played golf, as we saw this weekend, with right. No previously scheduled public events.
Yeah. So, just to let her know, I don't think they did the segment on Rick Perry flying to Europe when the Ebola was in his state. But the golf, of course, there's a direct line. Every time you hit a golf ball, somebody gets Ebola.
I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
He had Sylvia Burwell, Susan Rice. Mm-hmm. He had Lisa Monaco there. And, of course, Tom Frieden was there via the telephone, all explaining how they're handling the crisis, how it unfolds.
So if the CDC is talking about how they're going to rethink the way they address Ebola in this country, that is a little scary because, keep in mind, for so long we've heard them say, we got it handled, we got it handled. Now, yesterday they said, we're rethinking the whole thing. One of the things they might do is when somebody comes out of a room with a patient with Ebola, they might spray them down with some sort of antiviral stuff. Let's also hope that at this point, given what we have now learned, they're rethinking those 4,000 troops that we're going to send to West Africa. By the way, there is the president yesterday at that 3 p.m. meeting at the White House. It was the only item on his public schedule. You would normally think that in something like this, the Surgeon General would be in charge, but right now, at this point, oddly, the United States of America does not have a Surgeon General. His nomination is tied up in politics.
Get Senator Bill Frist. I think that he would. Frist, he is the guy that seems most logical with the medical background and also knows how to lead a large body and work across.
Yeah. Just tied up in politics. What are those tying up in politics? It's just politics. It's just politics because Rand Paul put a hold on the nomination Vivek Murthy to be the Surgeon General. And why? Well, of course, because he's not qualified as a doctor. No, that's not it. He's a doctor. He's extremely qualified. Experience in community-based care, communicating complex messages and straightforward. Oh, I know what it is. It's because he once said that guns kill people.
I'll give you the straight dope on this, Sam. One, the Constitution. And number two, Indians are sort of like the Jews of the other part of the world. My dad and I don't like them particularly either. And those are the two reasons that he's getting blocked. And this whole gun thing was a godsend because I was going to do it regardless.
There you have it.
When you come out and you say guns kill people, I mean, if you're going to set a landmine on that on yourself like that, I mean, please proceed, Vivek Lakshman or whatever.
Oh, God. Now, there's data. And,
you know, black people used to be Republicans, Sam? Did you know that? I think a lot of black people don't know that because they're listening to rap music or something. But we should talk to them and reach out to them more.
Yes.
Maybe through hip hop.
Definitely.
I like that. Ludacris is a good artist. I listen to him sometimes in my car. The windows rolled up.
Matthew Iglesias has a good and I was on Sharpton's show yesterday trying to make this point as to why what is driving some of the hype about Ebola. Part of it is just that it, apparently there's a perception that it gets ratings, and you know, we had a segment on the hyping of Ebola after a show that was almost at the end of a show that was virtually all about Ebola. But with that said, a 2012, this is coming from Matt Iglesias, 2012 paper by Larry Bartels and Christopher Aiken details the phenomenon they label blind retrospection. And it offers a deep dive into the political consequences of a wave of shark attacks that happened on the Jersey Shore in the summer of 1916. Looking at Woodrow Wilson's 1916 re-election bid, Bartels and Aiken show that Wilson's vote fell by about 10 percentage point in shark-afflicted communities relative to where it would otherwise have been. So just the notion that the world was falling apart because these sharks were attacking was enough to drive down the vote of a presidential bid. Another paper in 2010 showed that college football performance also affects voting behavior. A win by the local team causes the incumbent to receive an additional 1.6 percentage points of the vote in the Senate, gubernatorial, and presidential elections. And the magnitude of the effect gets larger as the local team gets more popular, suggesting the result is unlikely to be mere coincidence. They also discovered unexpected wins in the 2009 NCAA basketball tournament were associated with local upsurges in presidential approval. I mean, the bottom line is, if you think the world is going to hell in a handbasket because we are subject to an out-of-control pandemic in our country, chances are you're going to vote against the party in power, or at least holding the presidential. Now, we don't have that, but if you're doing your job on Fox News, you are arguing that we do. Let's go to the IMG Beard. How much of a donation will be necessary so that we never have to hear about gamers, their sad lives, their petty disputes ever again on the Majority Report? My checkbook is at the ready. Now, G-Beard is, I believe, from the UK. His spelling of check also would signify that. I'm going to say, and I generally do not do this, I generally do not put a price on this. Oh, yes, thank you. That was that's how I figured out he was from Great Britain. I generally don't do this. But I am going to say that a donation, and it does not have to be in American dollars, but it has to be the equivalent of $500,000, will get a moratorium on Gamergate for, I don't know, 3 months? Would that be fair? I mean, contemplate what we would do.
Sad gamers are
half a million
creating some real problems, though. This is becoming a real story.
Oh, he's writing his piece.
We've been receiving so many emails telling Sam and Michael, you know, this Gamergate thing's getting pretty big. Matt totally scooped the story. You guys really should let him talk about it.
Well, I'm not keeping you from talking about it. I think $500,000 is a fair amount of money.
That's fine. If you want to pay me.
In fact, there's probably no topic I wouldn't talk about except for maybe Social Security.
I will not stop talking about Social Security.
Did you see the graphic I just sent you? It's just look at it because what you just said literally 2 minutes
ago. The Fox Bowl, hell in a handbasket, yes.
I still don't want to talk about Gamergate, even if it gets serious.
Militant apathy. This mofo is psycho. Fits right in with the GOP. Oh, this is the Don Young story.
Do we have time?
Yeah, where is that story? I have it here somewhere.
I gave that to you.
It's very strange. So, this is a weird story. Alaska Representative Don Young is running for re-election. And according to Forrest Dunbar, who is the Democratic challenger, Young approached Dunbar at a debate, and he snarled, according to, this is what Dunbar had to say, he kind of snarled at me and said, "Don't you ever touch me. Don't ever touch me. The last guy who touched me ended up on the ground dead." And
that's pretty clear.
Young was pretty clear. I do not. That's him saying, "I don't like to be touched." So apparently there was a profile in Roll Call magazine, and they decided during the course of this profile to ask him about it. So they spoke to a congressman's this is basically what it said. A profile in Roll Call reports that Young and his staff have no official clarification. Roll Call asked Young about that comment, whether the last person to touch him really did end up dead. The congressman's response, there's some truth to that. Now, apparently it's unclear as to whether or not Young was saying there's some truth to the fact that I said that to Dunbar, or whether he said there's some truth to the fact that the guy ended up on the ground dead. Probably cruising to re-election in Alaska. All right, let's go back to the I Am Sugar High. Hey, Sam, did you hear about the case of Amazon warehouse workers suing to get paid for time spent in mandatory security screenings? Yes, I talk about that. I mentioned that the other day, I think.
the federal government, the U.S. government, is actually weighing in on the side of Amazon in this instance. The workers won in the Ninth Circuit. Now the Supreme Court and the White House are trying to get their victory overturned. This administration has been pretty consistently anti-worker. Apparently, it's a function of the U.S. concerned about setting precedent with things like maybe TSA. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's they're on the wrong side of that as far as I'm concerned. Left of the center. May interest you, you to learn that on Amazon.com, Cuomo's book has a one-star rating after 458 reviews. That's fantastic. Charlie, clearly correct response to Ebola is not to have your press secretary laugh about it and to not acknowledge it for several years like St. Ronnie did with the AIDS. Tina Dupuy, so far every case of Ebola in this country got it by helping people. So relax, Republicans, you're in the clear. Nice one. Cheney shot the dog. Can we have Obama explain his evil plan to spread Ebola?
Going as planned. Again, it's sort of shocking how astute Louis Gohmert is. I don't know how he understands. He said yesterday that it's a war on nurses. Obviously, they're the first phase of the attack. But pretty soon, people will be vomiting, losing vital bodily fluids, and, of course, converting to Islam. Long-term goal.
Jay-Z on the IM. You know, at 6 p.m. on a Friday, as I leave the office, I like to hear someone say, bon vivant. Cheers. In the U.K., we also have privatized telecoms. Doesn't it show freedom? Maybe he shook hands with someone who shortly thereafter had a bad fall. Don Young. I find it amazing. Postman says, I find it amazing that the hospital in Texas treating Ebola is refuting what the nurses have said to the press in conference calls. According to the hospital, the only mistake they made was misdiagnosing the first Ebola victim. They're essentially calling their non-union nurses liars. I'm happy now. Sam, we're flying to Iowa today. I'll be sure not to let anyone bleed out on us. Red Baron, right around the time when you post her YouTube stream went dead as well. Lost her YouTube stream. Oh, right around the time when you lost Isabel, the YouTube stream went dead as well. That's weird. Morella, the only thing strange that happened on my side is that the YouTube feed disappeared.
I noticed there was a drop, but that sometimes happens. I don't think there's any correlation between the two.
No, I think it was a wire on our end. Nefertiti, for what it's worth, I can't get the YouTube of the show to work today. Weird. Anyway, here's my movie recommendation, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Happy now. Executive function is an aspect associated with ADHD that goes along with dyslexia. Higher organizational functioning issues. They are usually quite gifted and artistic, too. Hmm. The DX Fool. Hi. Mediaite reported that the producers of Archer have decided to change the name of their spy organization from ISIS to Unnamed Entity. Now FX is pissed because they're left with several pounds of ISIS merchandise. I think John Benjamin should sell you this stuff dirt cheap so you can use the items as premiums for MR and Ring of Fire subscribers.
Mm.
Maybe we can get some swag like that if we do like an Indiegogo or something. Spaff, that was really well done, Jimmy. MR fan, great song, Jimmy. A movie you don't want to watch, guys, is Annabelle. Not sure if you guys like horror, but that's my two cents.
Never heard of it.
1504, kudos to Jimmy Reefer Cake. I just... hope that bigoted, arrogant douchebag Sam Harris was listening. A Square. Sam, sorry MR has to move so abruptly, but you'll be sure to be back up and running in time for recap of the midterms. I wish I could be as optimistic as Cliff. I think the results will be bad for Dems and off. Obama will go with bad legislation, maybe some grand bargain.
You want to do another...
pesetas for the move. Can I send a check or wait for the crowdfunding campaign? We're going to do a crowdfunding campaign. What's that?
Nothing. I was wondering if we wanted to do another office predictions on the midterms.
Not today. Point. Let's do it. We'll do it soon. L.R. Parter, breaking from the Hill. Pentagon shut down parking lot and entrance Friday morning after police officers found a woman who had recently visited Africa vomiting in a parking lot. Pentagon spokesman said the Arlington County Fire Department was notified to respond immediately given the fears about additional cases of Ebola. Quintile. Cliff's optimism is beginning to turn my mood on the midterm. Still have my doubts. Charlie Pierce has a great blog post on how the Beltway press and corporate media want a Republican win just to confirm how smart they are. They're basically attempting to downplay the level of crazy that Ernst Cotton Gardner display regularly. I think there's some truth to that. And Buonara.
But, you know, you don't see even, like, I don't even see coverage of this on MSNBC that much.
No.
It's weird. Ronald Reagan would have stopped Ebola by giving weapons to freedom-fighting antibodies and by demanding that Africa tear down this virus. Crypop Phil, amazing the terrorists captured in December 99 came across the Canadian border, not the southern border. Buster Paltrie, forget Continuum, forget Ishtar. I saw this disaster, that disaster when it came out, owing to my adolescent yearning for Isabel Adjani. Never could I look at Adjani in the same way. I still want my money back. What you need to watch is Utopia from Britain's Channel 4. Smart, mean, funny, shocking, bold. Sci-fi, yes, but with the gritty British realism, like Thomas Pynchon writing a season of The Office UK, directed by David Lynch, circa Twin Peaks. Wow.
Did you ever see Brazil?
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
That kind of dystopia sci-fi. Yeah.
Utopia. British Channel 4. I wonder if that's on, where I can get that. P.S. So I make this great Dr. Block remix for you. The Song of the Volga Boatman beats the crap out of that Aztec camera version, and you never play it. What's a guy got to do to get a harumph out of you guys?
Send it again.
He's just sent it to me here.
Oh.
Let's play it right now.
We played this.
Shut up!
Yeah, we played this.
We did play it.
We did play this.
Shut up!
Harumph. From us.
Hey.
We did hear it. We did play it. Hummer 3 Doe. Fox and Friends yesterday was complaining that Obama canceled a fundraiser and that was going to raise fears about Ebola. Nice. Wise Line Report. Sounds like Don Young goes to a lot of Alaska events like Todd Palin's birthday bash. Nate, thanks so much for Jimmy for updating and improving my song. I loved it. Great job. And the final IM of the week, folks. Jay Tingle, really great show today. I think what happened at the Pentagon was a woman vomited because she had just heard Africa by Toto. Folks, Matt and Mike Monday. I'll be back Tuesday. Have a great weekend.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice was made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. And I shifted into you while I shifted in and out of you.